Today on Wings, the continuing saga of the chemical disaster in Bhopal.
It's come to our attention that chemicals are being moved for incineration, and the destinations due to receive them are becoming very concerned about the health effects of the move and the incineration.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
December 2nd, 2024 was the 40th anniversary of a massive industrial disaster that still has multi-generational consequences. In Bhopal, India, what was once a small pesticide factory near a residential area grew and grew until a huge store of liquid methyl isocyanate erupted, polluting the air and water table, killing and disabling people over the whole area, causing failed pregnancies and birth defects, and more. A few local employees received small penalties from the court, but the company slid out from under its responsibility for the pollution, as many other companies around the world have done. 40 years later, in January 2025, the government began shipping tons of stored debris to another place for incineration. Environmentalists say its toxic ashes will be dumped in landfills, spreading the pollution. They call the move greenwashing, and say most of the pollutants and the major problems affecting generation after generation have still not been addressed. Producer Claudia Cragg covered this ongoing disaster for Wings on its 25th anniversary. The interviewee is Sarupa Mukherjee, who came to Bhopal to collect oral histories of women and joined their movement.
You have spent very many years involved with the cause of Bhopal.
Yeah.
How did it start for you?
See, it all began with a book that I was writing for children. My book came out in 2000, and since then I've been involved with the movement.
But Sarupa, when you first heard about Bhopal, where were you?
Oh, that was in 84. I was in Delhi. I think the entire nation was shell-shocked. The gas leaked into a dense slum area. And soon after the event, what one became aware of was the way in which the government of India refused to admit the magnitude of the disaster. There was consistent misinformation about the actual impact of the disaster. So one was very conscious of injustice that was done to a large section of people who lived on the margins of society. And very few of the people who lived in the vicinity even had jobs from the factory there. And disaster management did not have a clue to deal with the aftermath of a tragedy of this kind. And the initial reaction of the government was a total systemic failure. The very fact that a factory of this kind was allowed to exist in the middle of such a densely populated area, and the very fact that nobody had a clue to the impact of MIC.
MIC, the first letters of Mickey Mouse, stands for methyl isocyanate, a very toxic, nearly odorless gas. In Bhopal, it was used to make 7, a pesticide used on crops, livestock, and lawns. Union Carbide produced its own MIC at the Bhopal plant and stored it there.
After the disaster, when Union Carbide fled, literally fled, they left behind 5,000 tons of the world's most toxic waste on the factory site. That has seeped into the water. So now people are twice victimized. They are the gas survivors, and there are those who are victims of water contamination and of environmental pollution.
So how many Bhopal survivors are there?
The government number has remained static. I think 1,700 or so, you know. And they've never changed. They've let it remain at a static number. But Bhopalis will tell you it's over 8,000 people over weeks or months or a year. And 20 years, well, it's, I think, crossed 20,000.
So what are the ailments?
The two obvious organs which got affected by the gas were the lungs and the eyes. But the immunity system is so low that they are constantly falling prey to different kinds of infection. The muscular system, I mean, they're not able to carry loads or walk great distances. They've become anemic. They run fever.
Reproduction, children.
That is a major area. And that is one of the areas which was, in fact, underplayed by the government, you know, right from the beginning. Because those who lost their babies on that night because of spontaneous abortions, it was difficult to categorize it directly as an effect of the gas. They said people were running, people were frightened. But over the years, young girls suffering from menstrual disorders, you know, for instance, they don't produce healthy babies. They produce children who fall ill very frequently. But much more serious than all that is now children being born with congenital birth defects. A lot of them have cerebral palsy, you know, which is again something which has foxed doctors and researchers. And general mental retardation is very much there. A number of them were, you know, are born with cleft palates,
spina bifida.
Yeah, the typical kind of. It's growing. The numbers are growing, and of course the mental trauma. I mean, I've met so many of these people who suffer from. They relive that night.
Flashbacks.
Yeah, a lot of them have mental problems. Loads of them never sleep. So many of them lost their ability to cope with even any kind of stressful situation. A lot of them lost the will to live. One of the things which strikes you is the extent to which there was collusion between the corporation and the government. And this is something that one has discovered as part of the discovery process in the court, where deliberate cost-cutting decisions caused the disaster. It was not that there were no prior accidents and leaks which happened. They happened in a small scale, but they happened fairly regularly. And anybody who was looking at any of the papers that were coming in from the factory in Bhopal would know that malfunctioning of different pipes and different valves were being mentioned every day. And if despite that Bhopal happened, then somewhere you are directly responsible. At every step, the perpetrators of the crime came to be protected actively. It was not just a question of bringing the Americans to book. It was also a question of what about the Indian CEOs and the Indians who were in Union Carbide India Limited. Of course, you know, this was a subsidiary of a multinational. When it came to safety standards, a lot of it was controlled by UCC in America. But nevertheless, when it came to protecting the actual culprits, then the government protected the corporation. And the fact of the matter is that infamous settlement was really a sellout. The people who lived in the vicinity did not really gain at all. And even today, we don't address the whole issue of corporate liability. You know, a disaster of this magnitude and the fact that rehabilitation is necessary. I mean, so many people were affected, so many people were dying, so many people were suffering from severe impact of the gas on their bodies. But what happened was that when it came to the survivors and them as part of a system where they had to be compensated for what had happened to them, somehow the onus was on them to prove that they were victims. And this is where ultimately they had to take on the blame as well. For instance, it was said that most of these slum dwellers were migrant laborers. They had come from other parts of India to Madhya Pradesh looking for livelihood. And so a large number of them were actually illegal dwellers there.
What is the situation now?
See, 2001, Dow Chemical stepped in and merged with Union Carbide, which simply meant that the monolithic offender just vanished. they were willing to take the assets, but they were not willing to take the liability. Mm. So they will constantly sort of talk about how they are not responsible for the pollution on ground, you know. So today, when the vital question of the cleanup comes up, Dow Chemicals is not willing to clean up. They say it's Union Carbide and we are not responsible for, you know. And the government is caught in a double bind because what the state government did for, we don't know what are the reasons, it simply took back the land. Actually, the lease signed does say that, you know, you have to return a land in its original condition. But the state just took back the land. So actually, the company is on strong grounds when it says that you better clean it up yourself because it's now yours. But because of persistent protest from the survivors, the government is now saying, okay, fine, we'll do the cleanup, but we'll try and get Dow to pay for it.
In a crowded market in Delhi, two women sit in a car. One is Wings reporter Claudia Cragg. The other, Sarupa Mukherjee, author, English professor, and activist on behalf of the victims of Bhopal. Mukherjee was drawn into the struggle by meeting two women leaders of the Bhopal survivors, Rashida B. and Champa Devi Shukla. Despite health problems and tragic losses, the pair mounted an international campaign with four demands. The extradition of Union Carbide Corporation officials to face trial in Bhopal. Long-term health care and monitoring for survivors and their children, as well as the release of information on health impacts of the gases that were leaked. Cleanup of the former Union Carbide site and the surrounding area, and economic and social support to families and survivors who can no longer pursue their trade.
How did you meet Rashida B. and Champa Devi Shukla?
I had to go frequently to Bhopal to do field work. And through the Bhopal Net website, I could identify some key figures. And I went with a list of names. That was part of how I systematized my research. And once you're there, you meet more people through connections, word of mouth, recognition of what I was doing. Because I must tell you one thing. It's not that you can just go there and earn their confidence. They are very cynical because they also used to...
But rightly so.
Yes, absolutely. Because they've got tired telling their stories. Or they're not sure what you want to hear. Particularly a lot of media interventions feel exploited. They say that people come and interview us so many times, but nobody really... We don't get an idea what they're going to do with all this footage that they're gathering. The middle class intervention has been of various kinds, you know. Some of it is indeed exploitative. So, I mean, I might have gone and met Rashida B. and Champa Devi Shukla because they were part of the list that I had drawn. But for me, it's been a kind of joining in their journey. They're very well aware of the books that are brought out. You know, that now there's an international platform where, you know, they are recognized. But at an intrinsic level, it means very little for them. But they value research a great deal. And for them, Bhopal has to be documented properly. And it's got to reach the corridors of power. I mean, it's one of the most unnerving experiences that I've ever had. You know, I've gone to many of their demonstrations. I've participated in a number of them. I've gone to their weekly meetings and I've sat with them, you know. And so many of them have come to me and they're all very eager for me to take note of whatever's happened to them. They see themselves as case studies. And they tell me that when you go back to Delhi, for them, Delhi is the seat of power. It's close to the government. Please convey to the Prime Minister, convey to the Chemical Ministry. Go and tell them. It's made me feel so helpless. Because little do they know, nobody can claim at any point to bring actual solutions or even be able to participate in giving them justice. So there's a tremendous amount of belief that if Bhopal is documented well enough and if it reaches out to the world, they keep saying, the world has forgotten us. Please go there and tell people about us.
Have you met with Manmohan Singh, the Indian
Prime Minister? I've been part of delegates which have gone on behalf of the survivors groups. I've met him face to face,
and yeah. Bhopal has been discussed.
Yes, I personally haven't met Manmohan Singh, but certainly the minister I've met, the chemical minister.
And he is?
At that point, he was Pasvan, you know. And promises are made, because you see, when you go to them with Bhopal, in all fairness, they can't dismiss you entirely. It's an issue that they might collude and ignore, etc. But when it comes to the public posture,
it could come back and bite them.
Yeah. So they make promises. They tell you.
Like what?
For instance, Pasvan did say that I will look into the problem of drinking water, you know. And yes, when the minister sort of calls the bureaucrats and asks them whether things have got done or not done and does his own kind of intervention, then some amount of work gets done. For instance, if it's a question of laying down pipelines, at least on paper it would get signed, and some amount of at least cosmetic work will get done. You know, it's been a constant attempt to get things done simply at the, you know, at the ground level.
Has anybody put a figure on the cleanup to totally rehabilitate the land for a start, to clean up the environmental damage? Is there a figure even for that?
You see, the government has come up with an odd figure. They've said that we will ask Dow to pay us 100 crores when the actual cleanup, one knows, is going to cost far, far more than 100 crores. So it's also been playing around with numbers, you know. I mean, the actual settlement money came to $500 to every gas victim. And what is $500? I mean, in terms of... You see, also, has the government done sustained research into arriving at proper numbers? There's also been a lot of stopgap methods.
But that's about appearances.
Yeah, that's about appearances. And also because specific problems have arisen. For instance, monsoons would mean some of the solar ponds would start spilling over and there would be an actual cross-contamination. So, you know, the administration is called upon to deal with a situation like that. Or, say, chemicals have caught fire, so you need a firefighting. So the government is caught between doing all that, you know, where the real issues of medical rehabilitation or economic rehabilitation, providing jobs, none of that gets done.
So what would it take, Sarupa? If you could draw up a dream list, what would be done?
Medical rehabilitation, I think, tops the list, because people still continue to suffer from grievous impact of the gas on the body. They remain ill. The cases of cancer are coming up. Cases of tuberculosis are coming up. They are very, very ill. And economic rehabilitation, livelihood issue, is a very major issue, because most of them cannot work.
They can't leave and they can't work. Yeah. So is there going to be a result of any kind at some point? You said that Rishi Dubey and Champa Devi Shukla are optimistic. Are you optimistic?
See, for them, we will not give up the fight. And already we find that the second generation, there's a group which has formed under the International Campaign for Justice for Bhopal, which is called Children Against Carbide. So there's a second generation which is coming up, which is fighting. You know, we'll fight to the last. But a cynicism grows around when they see how Dow Chemicals is coming back to India in a big way. And it is true that corporate India has a grip on the middle class imagination. A lot of people feel that even the survivors of the worst disaster have to ultimately move on. Yeah, that's what they say. The city is divided by the two lakes, and the gas came right up to the lakes, and then it didn't travel to the other part of the city. And the other part of the city is the upper middle class, the bureaucratic class. That's where they live. So it's old Bhopal, which consists of the, you know, the poor
itinerants.
Yes, they are the ones who got affected. Bhopal is, you know, it's divided into two parts, and the new Bhopal and those who were unaffected by the gas have always viewed the Bhopal survivor as a parasite on society, you know.
Chemical
so it's a very
disaster.
Complex kind of, what you call blame, and at the same time saying that, okay, fine, now 25 years is long enough, so move on. And on the other hand, the Bhopal survivors will say that 25 years is enough for injustice and we will not give up fighting.
20 years after the disaster, India filed a lawsuit against Dow Chemical, which had acquired Union Carbide. It called for $22 million as a down payment on the cost of cleanup. This would have been over and above the $470 million Union Carbide had paid as, quote, full and final compensation to the Indian government for dispersal to the people affected. Indian multi-billionaire Ratan Tata requested that India drop the lawsuit. He offered to raise remediation funds from members of his newly formed U.S.-India Business Forum. Activists were outraged that he wanted the culprits off the hook. Again, Swarupa Mukherjee, author of the book Surviving Bhopal.
Suddenly, out of the blue, Ratan Tata came up with forming a kind of corporate, corpus with a corporate conscience. You know, we will work towards creating a cleaner world. But the minute we are talking about this corporate corpus stepping in to clean up, you know, Dow Chemicals is going to get away. The whole idea of the polluter pay principle, which is something that the legal system, even the government of India, you know, they recognize is valid in the case of Bhopal. Somehow, it'll simply mean that the whole question of justice will be replaced. In fact, it'll move towards what, you know, the Bhopalis say is a second settlement, which is going to be even worse than the first. You know? There's a resistance to that. And also, one is not at all sure about what kind of cleanup will get done. Because you see, in between, the government came in and stepped forward and said that, okay, fine, we will do the surface cleanup. And indeed, they did that in the sense that all the toxic waste lying on the surface were sort of put into these sealed containers. On the face of it, it would seem that some kind of cleanup has begun. But the two issues that still remain, and they are unresolved, is what is going to happen to this toxic waste? I mean, they are suggesting that will be taken to Gujarat and, you know, they'll be burnt up, you know, so they're saying.
And that'll create fumes.
Yes, it'll create. You know, the Gujarat government is actually not quite willing, you know, but, you know, all kinds of pressures are working on them. So the Tatas, when they claim they will do the cleanup, it is a fact that the technology that will be required, one is not even sure whether it's, and who possesses the kind of know-how for that, and will it be simply a cosmetic cleanup?
So it might just all be a sham.
It could be a sham, you know. And Tata have had a history of polluting in various other places. They don't have a clean
jet. So they're doing it to solve their own conscience. Yeah.
Nobody believes them when they come and say that we will clean up.
Bhopal survivor organizations allege that Tata Group is complicit in blocking former Union Carbide Chair Warren Anderson from being tried in India.
If you were to meet Warren Anderson,
yeah,
what would you say to him?
I'll just ask him how he sleeps at night for the last 25 years. I mean, yes, it's often said that it's very difficult to pin down blame on an industry because clearly nobody will open the valves and allow 40 tons of MIC to get into the air. I mean, nobody would do that physically. I mean, yes, but in this case, it almost seems that the system which was in place was preparing for a Bhopal to happen. And if, despite that, you did nothing, then, I mean, how do you sleep for the next 25 years?
Swarupa Mukherjee, PhD, was interviewed for Wings by Claudia Cragg. Mukherjee is an English professor at the Hindu College of Delhi University and a staff advisor to the We for Bhopal movement.
We for Bhopal?
Yeah. It's essentially a student group, and a body of students were talking about spreading awareness about Bhopal. We did a lot of collective activities which were very exciting. One of the main things we did, a group of students went to Bhopal and they brought out a student's report, which was called Closer to Reality. And they shot a 24 minutes film, which was done completely by amateur students, just carrying the handycam. And they did the editing and they did everything. And they made the film. And we used it to spread the word. And the response was enormous. It has become a little dormant because those lot of students have all passed out and gone away, and I'm about to plan it out of how to get the students. But those students who have gone out, they've been in touch in every way. I mean, though they are now in different cities, different parts of the globe, two of them, they have gone on to do their PhD.
In something related?
Yes, indeed. And in various ways, they've been involved with Bhopal in different ways. I mean, today, for instance, if I need them to sign a petition, I mean, whichever part of India, whichever part of the globe they are, they will sign it, you know. So it's been that kind of sense of at least a bunch of students whose lives and perception of things, and I dare say the kind of jobs they go on to do, have changed in that sense, you know.
And how has it changed you, Sarupa?
Oh, it's changed everything about me. It's changed the way I teach, the way I do research, the way I write, even my novels, and any and everything, it's changed.
And someone with a PhD in Shakespeare and Marlowe.
Yeah, true. In fact, I'll tell you something very interesting about being a literature person. Whenever I've gone to meet anybody, I mean, it's a politician, a bureaucrat, a professional, I mean, those who are working on the other side with the government, with corporations, etc., you know, anybody. I mean, the minute they ask me, you know, what do you do? And I tell them I'm a sort of student of literature, I'm a teacher of literature, they instantly relax, you know, because I think they don't see me as a threat after that, you know. And what is very strange is that all of them will then use the language of literature to make their point. I'll give you an example. I mean, I went to meet this doctor who was part of the original team from Indian Council of Medical Research, and they were doing all the autopsies right then. And he's an old man now, and, you know, I went to meet him as part of the oral history that I was doing. And as he was, you know, showing me the slides, he kept telling me that this is the picture of hell. Can you name a single of the writers that you teach or read who can describe hell better than
Dante.
This? And they start speaking my language, you know. So I personally think that my being a person from literature has worked in my favor in a very, very big way.
Sarupa Mukherjee spoke with Claudia Cragg in 2009. Since then, she published the book Surviving Bhopal, Dancing Bodies, Written Texts, and Oral Testimonials of Women in the Wake of an Industrial Disaster. She also wrote two books on Bhopal for young people. The International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal is still very active in 2025. They now number the victims at around 500,000 people. Updates at bhopal.net. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.